I'm Lynn Okhmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation launched its fourth annual Goalkeepers Report. The report charts progress toward the UN's global goals for sustainable development. This year, new data shows that COVID-19 has stopped decades of progress across a broad range of health and development priorities in their tracks. In the publication, Bill and Melinda Gates offer proposals for how best to move forward. I spoke with Omar Sedi, Africa Director at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, about some of the findings of this year's Goalkeepers Report. Take a listen.
Sheikh Omar Sedi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having us.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just released its fourth annual Goalkeepers Report. Among other things, it shows how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted progress made on development. Would you give us a sense of some of the main findings this year?
So the report this year is quite different from previous years because there's a heavy emphasis on the impact of COVID-19. So in terms of really key messages, I will begin with the one that where after 20 years of stunning advances towards our global goals, where we are looking at to improve health and to reduce poverty, COVID-19 has effectively stopped that progress in its tracks. And this has had ripple effects that are really catastrophic. This is really, really serious. When I think about a parameter that we've been all very focused on, that is really the reduction of extreme poverty. And the benchmark there is that you're looking at people who are earning $1.90 a day and below. So there's been a 28% progress in reducing extreme poverty since 1990. And now that is being reversed because we have 13 more people that will be below that threshold by the end of the year, given the data that we've been able to obtain. Although, as we said in the report, in this environment, since data is just being pulled immediately thereafter, it is not 100% precise, but based on the work of our partners and the work we've done with them, this is what we're seeing.
How much time is put in to gather this data? When we look at what has been recorded for this year's report, what time frame are we looking at?
Well, I mean, obviously, a lot of time has been put in sort of looking at it, but we felt duty-bound to come up with something about what we have so far. And this is the biggest topic today that affects the key goals that we are after. As you know, the philosophy or the spirit behind Goalkeepers is to be in a position where we allow decision makers to get a sense of where we are in trying to get into our sustainable development goals. And then that would inform decision making. But we felt that this time, given the impact, obviously directionally we knew where this was going, that we felt that this needed to be looked at. So yes, a lot of time has been put in there, but it is just to say from the time the pandemic hit and where we are at this point in time, what the damage has been. And there've been a lot of other things that we've looked at. When you look at basically immunization coverage, which is really critical, it has gone from 80%, from 84% to 70%. And this is a setback that we've noticed just in 25 weeks, right? It's a setback that for something that was built in 25 years. So these numbers are so significant that we couldn't just wait for another round and turn to start tabulating them because it is very important to see that for decision making. But there's another theme also which is very important, especially going back to your first question about the key themes. One of those is just inequality. It has reinforced the fact that we actually live in an unequal society. Think about the efforts that were done by the many countries who were fighting the health crisis and the economic crisis. You take a sample of the G20 countries that had to come up with emergency responses, had to come up with different stimulus for their population. And on average, they've set aside about 22% of their GDP to support their citizens. The equivalent of that for sub-Saharan Africa is 3%. And then when these pandemics also hit, they disproportionately tend to affect those who are the most vulnerable, including girls and children. So that is also a very important theme. The other theme that we also highlight is that despite the difficulties that many of these countries have faced under COVID, they've tried as best as they can to innovate and to be responsible. I mean, when I think about the headlines for Africa, which always, generally in the press, do not tend to be that glamorous or that good.
Absolutely. But we saw that there have been a lot of efforts put together on the continent. So what do you make of the response in Africa with regards to COVID-19?
I think overall, I have to say that I'm proud of African leaders because very early on, they've taken action. The Benin countries, I remember Rwanda, before even there was a first case, they basically closed. They basically listened to the experts in health and took action very quickly. You have a country like Senegal, innovation. Those headlines about vaccines diagnostics that would cost about $1, with research behind it, ingenuity behind it. Ghana, pool testing to preserve real resources so that they can do it in a very smart way, given their means. Nigeria, the entire private sector, coming up with an initiative to put money aside so that they can help the officials fight with it. So a lot of different things have been done. South Africa, where you have chronically ill patients of HIV and TB who need those medicine in order to go and get those medicine, putting in place a mechanism using digital technology to deliver those medicines to those patients so that they can stay home and avoid the traffic that will create more infection in the process. So they've done everything that they possibly could. They followed the science, but guess what happened after that? After they did the lockdown and did everything that they were supposed to do, they were hit. In fact, you could say they were hit by the economic crisis first, before the health crisis really took its toll. So I really want to commend those countries with very small means, have come and honored us and did everything that they could to minimize the impact, although the impact is still very high. 80%+ of our populations here are in the informal sector. And the data shows that for those in that segment that's vulnerable, within a month, they've lost most of their revenues or anything that they could save. You know, you and I are here on this video conference. We can do our work this way. Well, for many in the continent, they do not have that luxury. They have to go and get food to put on the table. So it's either that, right, or the suffering. So, and this is what I always tell my colleagues, that what they've had to do is to deal with what we call the trade of triangle, fighting the pandemic, fighting the economic pressures where it's about deciding between life and livelihood, and then keeping essential services, because that was also the problem, is that when I talk about the setbacks, right? So we talked about essential services. I talked about immunization. So a lot of the things that were done to get some gain in health, they've basically been wiped out.
How do we move forward and ensure that some of the gains that were made are not completely lost. At this point, African countries have tried their best. The world is trying its best, but we're still seeing COVID-19's impact. So what is there to be done that can really show concrete results for Africa specifically?
Yeah, but I think the first thing is that COVID response, as we see it, cannot be a one-country response. It cannot be a segment of countries' response. This is where, when we talk about global health or global efforts to support really health for everyone is actually needed. Because anyone will tell you that COVID somewhere is really COVID everywhere. In other words, anywhere you have COVID, you have it everywhere because it spreads. Remember, it started in a different continent. Before you know it, it came to us. So what is needed is a global concerted effort to look at the problem holistically, knowing that even those who are rushing to solve just their country's problem, there are limitations to that as well, right? So this is one of those situations where we all join by the hips. So, and long-term or medium-term, it would be very difficult to take care of this if you do not have a vaccine that stops it. And to get to that level, there has to be situations where distribution should be made, not according to who can afford it, according to who actually needs it, including health workers, et cetera, et cetera. You have to look at the world in big space where you have that consultation. Those who can afford it less should be willing, those who can really afford it should be willing to actually contribute to it in a meaningful way. And the pharmaceuticals companies need to be willing to make it available at an affordable price. So consultation, those who can afford it to contribute more to it, and then those who are making it, make it affordable. Because, yes, there is a human side to going that way, but there is also a fundamental side that basically looks at reality, because this is something that you cannot look at in isolation.
And let's talk about some specific projects, maybe one or two. For example, we see that there is the African Medical Supply Platforms.
Well, let me spend a little bit more time with the African Medical Supplies Platform, which I've been spending a lot of time with. The person who actually put it in place, it's the AU Special Envoy, Strive Masiyiwa, who has...
It is time for a short break. When we return, we'll have more of my conversation with Umar Sedi, Africa Director at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Fali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us, tonight we are discussing the Sustainable Development Goals and the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Here is more of my discussion with Umar Sedi, Africa Director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, regarding the Foundation's 2020 Goalkeepers Report.
Really use his own ideas, been surrounded by people who have a track record of doing things, who has worked very, very closely with the Africa CDC, and has worked with a number of partners around the world to basically say to himself, why don't we just, in addition to the traditional sources of supply, make sure that we have another source that is Africa-owned and Africa-led, where we use our ingenuity, whether it's digital, and our competence to make sure that we provide for our heads of states who have actually appointed him to this role and to make the supplies available. And it started with PPEs, protective equipments. It has led him and the team to diagnostics. And let me also not forget other partners who've been involved in this effort. Africa Exim with Dr. Orama, UNICA with Vera Songwe, and others who have, including foundations, who have worked around this platform to make it a reality. And it's a lot of pride for me to talk about this kind of mechanism, because we could have just sat down and say, let's just use the traditional mechanism. And as it came into stream, our foundation also decided to support this platform, making it possible for the platform to have therapeutics, which was the next battle after you get some of the key medical supplies, knowing that our economies are opening and that there would be cases to treat until we get the vaccine. And we're also working with them to figure out to make sure that we have the right testing methods by going to antigen testing that are a little bit faster. Hopefully those will help unclog the borders that are making it difficult for our countries to trade and open up their economies. So I can talk about others, but this is one I am particularly proud of, because it is Africa-led, it is Africa-owned, with African ideas in collaboration with international partners who are ready to interact with them and then accompany them in this journey.
So then what can countries expect, look forward to in the long run with this platform?
Well, it's another choice that they have now, that they don't have to only rely on the few that were available. This is just one of those situations where, frankly, with lives at stake, the more choices, the merrier. It goes beyond just even getting a good price for something. It's about getting in. You may probably remember when the crisis hit, right? Many had money on the table. They wanted to buy simple things as masks.
Yes.
They couldn't find them anywhere, right? So when these platforms are created, they allow you to aggregate. And that aggregation makes it easier for you to get those supplies. And then obviously you need a lot of partners. In this case, they've also worked with a lot of logistical partners, the likes of Ethiopian Airlines, South African Airways, and all the logistics that they could find in the continent to basically get this going. So it was put in place to make sure that that supplies accrue, and then the type of supplies are changing as the evolution of this platform is moving in the right direction. So hopefully that seriousness will continue to prevail and also show that Africans can actually undertake something this important, this big, and get it right.
So, Mr. Sedi, what will recovery look like for the African continent with this pandemic to even think about getting back on track to attaining the SDGs?
Well, A lot of ground has been lost, as you've seen from the data that we shared in terms of the SDGs. So my perspective, I'll go back to the trade of triangles that we were in. So it's not either one or the other. It's all of the above. It's about maintaining a very strong discipline in not forgetting the work that was being done before COVID, those essential services, right? So you don't want to be, and those were also lessons of Ebola, where things that were not so apparent, people were fighting Ebola, but the consequences of others who did not have access to care, right? And there are lots of numbers out there. Those consequences were catastrophic in a way. So that's the first thing, is those essential services, to keep an eye on them and to make sure that we put them on stream and not lose track of them. The fight for COVID will continue, because these are things that hit you every day, right? So that you continue. But the other fight also is the economic livelihood, rebuilding those countries, getting any kind of get debt relief you can, making it possible for those who are not working to be able to work, knowing that, again, one of our biggest handicaps is that we tend to have an informal economy. And an informal economy has a lot of these drawbacks. So making it possible for people to go to work. And there have been countries, like I remember Burkina Faso, providing stimulus to those who are selling fruits by making it possible for them to have access to basic utilities so they can afford it by reducing it. So those kind of things. So it's a fight that has to put you in all these three fronts. It cannot be one or the other, because whichever one of the three that you let go, you're going to get hurt. But it's also getting the courage to go out there, but it's about also following the science, because we've seen that those who follow the science have put themselves in situations where it became less catastrophic than it could have been. Because just imagine for a second, a lot of these early measures that were taken by these countries were not taken. I mean, think about what was projected then in terms of what would happen to this country. Just imagine for a second, half of that had even happened. So just to be clear, I'm not saying that they're not in a bad situation, but it could have been worse if certain measures weren't taken. So don't let your foot down. Appreciate that you've done a great job, but just keep your foot there and battle and fight in all fronts, and also collaborate, because this is why global health matters. This is what put the likes of our foundation into this whole sphere, because somebody has to go out there and work with others so that those partnerships could be built, and that that partnership can yield something tangible. No one could do it alone. I mean, so this is what I was talking about earlier. Even those who can afford it, you cannot be in isolation. The virus does not distinguish between, you know, what you speak and what others speak. It doesn't distinguish about that. It just basically moves on if that collaboration doesn't exist.
And finally, before we wrap, Mr. Sadie, why should people, why should countries look forward to the Goalkeepers report each year?
This is the foundation saying itself that if you are really serious about making a difference, so it's about getting the right information there to get the attention of those who are supposed to use them and do something about them and make a difference. So it is one of the most powerful tools that I've seen at the foundation. And we have the energy to continue this work, because we believe that the more people know about the challenges they face, the more they can have policies that are adequate to really tackle those challenges. So that's what the Goalkeepers report do. It just gives people the incentive to act, and to act in the right way and make a difference in health and development.
Cheikh Oumar Sadi, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Schools in Somalia have reopened after being closed for 4 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. But as the new academic year begins, things don't look anything like they did before. Masks and social distancing are the new norms for pupils. Aid agencies say the COVID-19 pandemic is forcing more girls out of classrooms to meet family needs. Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA.
15-year-old Nasra Aidarus is happy to be back in class after a four-month school closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic that hit Somalia. The grade 7 student at Dainale Primary and Secondary School was just settling into her new school when classes were cancelled in March to limit the coronavirus pandemic. Her family came back to Somalia in 2018 after living in Yemen as a refugee for years. She was worried she may never fulfill her dream of becoming a doctor. She says her greatest fear was not to complete her education and to end her bright future there and be married off at a young age because of school closure. In the future, she said she wants to be a doctor so she can help her people. Aidarus is one of 390 students who went back to school in mid-August, but more have yet to report for fear of contracting the virus. Dawood Jiran is a Mercy Corps Somalia's country director. He says the coronavirus pandemic has taken away years of gains, drawing children, mostly girls, into classrooms.
When the schools were going on, girls had a safe space. We understand from the little assessments that we do, the quick assessment that we do, that now girls are being depended on more by the family. So, you know, the burden of supporting the social support to their families has become more. Girl dropouts have really increased. We also see the teenage girls, once they stay at home for long, we see the issue of early marriage increasing. Now, because society is feeling they need support,
aid agencies say Somalia has one of the world's largest population of children out of school, 2 million out of 5 school-age children. The country's education system has been affected by decades of conflict, displacement, and most recently, the coronavirus. Dainale School Deputy Head Teacher Mahad Dahir Hassan says it is reaching out to the children's families to bring them back to class.
Inta badan way imaadaan iskuulka laakiin haddeertaan qaar ah waxay ku maqan yihiin anaga inuu na sameeyno.
He says some students are avoiding coming to school. They fear contracting the virus. He says they are trying to reach out to the parents and students and assure them that the school is doing everything possible to minimize the virus spread by keeping students apart. He says some students have heeded the call and have reported to the school, but some have yet to report. Though they continue to work to have them back, he said at times they even go to their homes to convince them to return to school. Teachers are doing at least 2 shifts a day after creating more classrooms to limit the spread of COVID-19, which has doubled the work of the few teachers in Somalia's schools. President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo has just inaugurated the national curriculum for secondary schools, bringing an end to 3 decades of multiple non-standardized educational systems in Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's it for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Omar Sedi, Africa Director at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more often, and strive to make every day a healthy day. This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.